What's up, sunshine? Hello one more time from San Antonio and the Alamo. Before heading home, I'm Coy Wire. This is CNN 10, your 10 minutes of news, where I simply tell you the what, letting you decide what to think. Today is Wednesday, April 9th, the 99th day of the year. We are already halfway through the week, so we're going to keep those good vibes flowing, because that's just what we do. Today is hashtag Your Word Wednesday, so stay alert and listen up to see if the vocab word you submitted on my socials helped us write today's show. Let's get you your news. We start today with a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court allowing President Donald Trump's administration to, for now, let immigration officials rely on a sweeping wartime authority to carry out rapid deportations. The 1789 law, the Alien Enemies Act, was previously only used when the U.S. was at war. The law has been invoked three times before, most recently to justify some internments during World War II. The Supreme Court's ruling on the emergency appeal centered around the administration's use of the act to speed up deportations while lower courts argued over the act's use. Here's CNN legal expert Ellie Honig with his thoughts on what this means for the Trump administration and the issues and concerns by those who are opposed to the ruling.
This is a win for the Trump administration because the majority here, the six conservative justices, said that the deportation process under the Alien Enemies Act can continue, can resume for now. The liberals wanted to keep it all on pause. All nine justices agree that any deportee under this act does have a right to go to the courts and to challenge it. And the second part is they have to be given reasonable advance notice so that they actually, as a practical matter, can get to the courts and not be whisked away in the middle of the night like was originally done in this case.
By granting the Trump administration's request, immigration officials can now use the wartime authority to rapidly deport alleged gang members. The unsigned decision also noted that going forward, people who are deported should be told they are subject to the act so they have, quote, reasonable time to bring legal challenges to their deportation. Now to the U.S. state of Florida, where lawmakers are advancing a bill that would loosen child labor laws and eliminate working time restrictions on teenagers as young as 14 years old and end guaranteed meal breaks for 16 and 17-year-olds. The proposed law is a response to a gap in employment left by a crackdown on undocumented immigrants in the state, leaving many low-wage jobs without workers to fill them. If the new law is passed, teenagers could be able to work overnight jobs on school days. State law currently prevents them from working earlier than 6:30 a.m. or later than 11 p.m. Our Ivan Rodriguez shows us how some Florida businesses are reacting to the proposed changes to employing minors. And I want you to pay attention to both sides of this debate. And if you have time, discuss amongst yourselves what you think might be the best path forward.
From a classic America soda fountain to handmade candy, Gregory Cohen has captivated his customers for more than three decades. As a business owner who has hired teenagers before, Cohen says certain parts of a proposed Florida bill aimed at deleting certain restrictions on minors could make sense in terms of flexibility and when teen workers take breaks.
Getting that half-hour break exactly at 4 hours or exactly at the right time so we don't violate is really hard to schedule when you don't know when the customers are coming in.
Still,
is this really changing much? I don't know.
The bill would allow 16 and 17-year-olds to work more than 8 hours in a day when school is scheduled the next day and work over 30 hours a week during the school year without mandated breaks. For 14 and 15-year-olds who are homeschooled, attend virtual school, or have graduated high school, the bill also removes restrictions on overnight work on school days. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis argues the change will help fill positions left by deported migrants.
What's wrong with expecting, like, our young people to be working part-time now? I mean, like, that's how it used to be when I was growing up. Why do we say we need to import foreigners, even import them illegally, when, you know, teenagers used to work at these resorts?
Do you believe that this bill would have an impact on a child's development?
Absolutely, because we already are seeing high levels of absenteeism.
Sudduf Knight with the Florida Policy Institute says right now children who want to work longer hours can already do so through a waiver process involving parents, guardians, or a school superintendent.
This bill would eliminate that process altogether. So parents are essentially being excluded from the process of the decision making around how long and how much their kids work.
Members of the Youth Action Fund, a nonprofit made up of high school and university students, rallied at the state capitol.
The lawmakers are trying to bring us back to the Gilded Age, and that cannot be more true. This is going to target low-income people, and obviously, as a result, black and brown Floridians who are more likely to have to rely on income from a young age to support their families.
Good puppies. Good puppies.
For Cliff and Shannon Sherry, owners of Doggy Days Daycare, it's unnecessary to change the law since they've never had any issue hiring minors before.
Come on, girl.
Most importantly, they believe kids should be kids.
We just hope it's not going to lead to kids having to make a tough decision as to whether they need to work or they can do those, you know, things that everybody wants to do when they're kids.
The number of child violations in Florida has nearly tripled in recent years, according to the U.S. Department of Labor Statistics. Now, legislative analysis of the bill says it will increase opportunities to generate income for certain individuals and employers and could also have a positive economic impact on the private sector. If passed, the law will take effect July 1st.
10-second trivia. Who was the first U.S. president to ride aboard a nuclear submarine? Theodore Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight D. Eisenhower, or John F. Kennedy? Answer is President Eisenhower, who rode the USS Seawolf out of Newport, Rhode Island on September 26, 1957. The Seawolf was the nation's second nuclear-powered sub. This week, the first U.S. submarine specifically designed to accommodate female sailors officially joined the Navy's fleet. The USS Iowa is the newest nuclear-powered sub commissioned for active service. It's built for a crew of more than 130 people, including several women. For decades, military leaders argued against women joining submarine crews because of limited privacy on board and the cost of reconfiguring the vessels. But in 2010, the ban on women serving on submarines was lifted by then-Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, with the first female soldiers joining Navy subs in 2011. Until now, submarines had to be retrofitted to accommodate female crew members on board. The USS Iowa is the first to be specifically designed from the start with extra doors and additional bathroom arrangements. Our affiliate, WFSB, was at the ceremony, officially launching the USS Iowa into service. Take a look.
United States ship Iowa is in commission, and I am in command.
Very well, Captain. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Hundreds of veterans, as well as family and friends of the 140 crew members for the USS Iowa, gathered Saturday morning at Naval Submarine Base New London for the commissioning of the newest nuclear-powered submarine to join the Navy's fleet. This vessel is the third to be named for the state of Iowa. The previous ship was in service from 1943 to 1990 and served in World War II, the Korean War, and the Gulf War. This is also the first submarine to specifically accommodate women sailors.
They remain our nation's first line of defense, the tip of its spear, its stabilizing representative in a turbulent world. In just minutes, the new USS Iowa will officially begin carrying forward that proud tradition. It will do so through the skill and bravery of the American sailors, men and women alike, who will make up its first crew.
Today's story getting a 10 out of 10. Anything but vanilla, a legend on the ice, Ice Baby, breaking a record and for a good cause. Earlier this week, Alex Ovechkin became the NHL's all-time leading scorer with goal number 895, a copious amount of goals. He breaks the previous record held for more than 30 years by the great Wayne Gretzky, making the milestone even sweeter. Ovechkin has been helping charities reach their goals, donating money for every goal he scores. Through charity partnerships, he's raising money for pediatric cancer research.
As athletes, we're lucky to be recognized. We're lucky to play hockey. And we have that opportunity to help kids. I score a goal, and whatever number it is, no, we just donate that money.
What an ice gesture for the three-time MVP. Who knows how many more years he'll stick around. Puck, hopefully a long time, with every goal boosting net proceeds for charity.
All right. Thanks to all of you for submitting a bevy of captivating and compelling words for Your Word Wednesday. Today's winner is Mrs. Alfredson and all our friends at Glens Ferry Middle School in Glens Ferry, Idaho for copious, an adjective meaning abundant in supply or quantity. Copious amounts of love for all of you who've been submitting and subscribing on our CNN 10 YouTube channel. Our shout out today goes to the Falcons of John Adams Middle School in Charleston, West Virginia. Rise up and thank you for the poem. That's all we have time for now. I'll see you right back here tomorrow on CNN 10.